Laura Spear, explain for us the methodology used to compile the data for Kids Count.
Well, we've been doing Kids Count here at the Casey Foundation for 24 years. We use 16 indicators of child well-being in four basic areas: in economic well-being, education, health, and in the family and community domain. And we get our data from federal statistical agencies like the Census Bureau and the CDC, because we want to be able to compare across states. So we collect data that's collected from surveys in the same way in every state. And what we found is that North Carolina ranked 35th overall in terms of its child well-being based on those 16 indicators.
And how does that compare with other states in the Southeast?
Well, North Carolina is sort of at the top end of the Southeastern states. Most of the Southeastern states are in the sort of the bottom third of the overall ranking. North Carolina is one of the better states kind of in the Southeast in terms of child well-being.
Why does the report suggest things could get worse?
It's difficult to say what's going to happen in terms of the recovery from the recession. And certainly, there's a few different ways it could go. First of all, we know that there are fewer people unemployed in 2013 than there was in 2011, which is the data that we have in our report. However, what's also been happening at the same time is that state budgets have gotten really squeezed, and so state government is making decisions about how to spend that money. And oftentimes, some of the things that have been cut have included things like subsidized child care programs, for example, or health insurance coverage for kids. While we expect there will be some improvements on the employment side for lots of parents across the country, it's still not clear what the impact of these state budget cuts that have happened over the last few years will be on child well-being.
There's some sobering news in this report. One in four children living in poverty, one in three live in a family where an adult lacked full-time work.
That's right. We included data from 2011, showed that 26% or one in four kids in North Carolina live in households with incomes below the poverty line. That's about $22,000 for a family of four. So it's a relatively low bar. And then on top of that, what we see is that 37% of children in North Carolina live in a household where housing is just costing too much, where the high housing cost burden is the official way that it's put, but basically where they're spending more than 30% of their income on housing. So there really is kind of a squeeze on both sides. The income level is relatively low. There's a sizable number, about 580,000 children living in below the poverty line and households with incomes below the poverty line, and also a sizable number of children where they're really the cost of living is too high.
There were areas of improvement, though.
There were, yes. In the state of North Carolina, as well as in the country overall, we saw improvements in the educational outcomes for kids. All four of the indicators that we track in education got better between about 2005 and 2011, roughly. In addition, the health indicators got better, both in North Carolina and at the national level, and with all four of those indicators also improving.
So more children have health insurance and improved reading scores and math scores were seen?
That's right. In 2011, more children in the state of North Carolina had health insurance. 8% were without health insurance in the state, compared to 10% in 2008. And I think what's important to note there is that this is during the time of the recession. So we know, first of all, that fewer people had jobs. And at the same time, there was a decline in employer-sponsored health insurance coverage for those people who had jobs. So that oftentimes the jobs were being downgraded to be part-time, and so benefits weren't offered, or benefits just got too expensive for employers and they chose to not offer health insurance coverage. So during the time when there's less employer-sponsored health insurance, we continued to insure more kids in the U.S. overall and in North Carolina, which is a good thing, because that means that they're more likely to get those really important preventative health care that they need so that they are healthy and they're able to go to school and their parents don't miss work because they're home taking care of them. And so that's a good news story for sure.
The teen birth rate dropped to a historic low. Does that data surprise you?
We saw the teen birth rate drop at the national level to a historic low, as you mentioned, down to 34 per 1,000 teens, which is great news. And that's been a trend that we've seen over the last, I want to say, 10, 15 years or so, where there's been a decline in the teen birth rate after many years of increasing. And for me, it wasn't a surprise. I think for the average person who hears that the teen birth rate is at a historic low, it's a little bit surprising. I think that has to do a bit with what we see on TV and kind of what we see oftentimes in the media around teen birth. But when we look at teen births as well as the high school dropout rate, the teen alcohol and drug abuse rate, all those rates are better than they have been in decades. That says something about the teenagers that we have with us right now. In the United States, they, generally speaking, are doing better than their parents did when they were teenagers, and I think that's something that is a surprise to a lot of people.
So this report is filled with some good news and some challenging news. One of the challenges is that children of color seem to lag behind white children in nearly every category.
That's right, especially African American, Latino, and American Indian kids specifically did worse than the national average on all of the outcomes that pretty much all the outcomes that we track, not every single one of them, but very close to it. Asian children and white children tend to do better across the board. I mean, there's some places where there's more of a gap than others, but that is true. And for the first time this year, we included data on multi-race kids who are select two or more races in the boxes on those surveys. And what we find is that those children actually are pretty representative of the national average. They really are kind of the typical American kid these days. We find that they are pretty much at the national average on most of the outcomes that we track.
It's one thing to compile data, but it's another thing to make recommendations. Does the report do that?
This report is primarily a data report, that's true, but we do include some recommendations on what we think that we can, you know, what are the critical decisions that we think need to be made, because we think that it's important that you not only shine a light on the problems, but you show sort of the path out of them. What we highlighted in this book was really the critical importance of the early years. That's from birth until about age 5, because that's where the research has shown there's the biggest return on investment for intervention. We know that when children, especially children who are low income or have got other stress in their lives at that age, they're actually at a very severe disadvantage in terms of some things like their brain development and just access to the kinds of supports that they need at that age. So intervening then can make a big, big difference in the long run. And some of the estimates have shown that there can be a 10%, up to a 10% return on investment for investment by government in the early years. So doing things like home visiting program for parents to make sure that they have everything that they need to be the best parent they can be when they bring that baby home from the hospital, through to providing high-quality early childhood programs for kids, we think can make a big difference.
Which states have the highest overall score for child well-being, and is there an explanation as to what they are doing right?
The states at the top of our rankings this year are states in the Northeast, in New England states specifically. New Hampshire was number 1, Vermont was number 2, and Massachusetts number 3, followed by Minnesota and New Jersey at 4 and 5. Those are very different places. I mean, they are all sort of in the northern part of the country, but you know, when you think about the difference between New Jersey and Vermont, they're very different kinds of places. But what they do have in common is that those states tend to be places where there has been a long-term investment in the infrastructure for children, specifically in the education of the kids and the educational structure of the state. The other thing that they have in common is that, in general, their economies are pretty good, and the median income in the state is relatively high, as well as kind of the median education level of parents. So, you know, those things add up to being able to have good outcomes for kids overall and to being at the top of our ranking system.
So the report reinforces the notion that there are lots of factors, whether it be education, employment, intact families, and overall health.
That's right. It isn't only about economic well-being, but it really is the combination of education, health, the family and community supportiveness, you know, how high functioning the family and the community that the child lives in is, as well as economic well-being. We know that economics matter, but it's not the whole picture.
Laura Spears with the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Thank you very much.
Sure. Happy to be there.